beer, sports, and summer. This is the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast Summer Series presented by Buffalo Wild Wings in Ankeny and Ames. Now, here are your two Asian Zing loving hosts, Chris Williams and Brent Bloom.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to round two of the Buffalo Wild Wings in Ankeny and Ames sponsored summer series of podcasts here at CycloneFanatic.com. Listen, the last time Bloom and I did one of these, it was our favorite games in Iowa State history. For round two, we specifically recorded this knowing that a lot of you are going to be traveling for the 4th of July. I wanted to have you something to listen to. We're doing it over booze, but for the what ifs, for the nut cups portion of the summer series, I'm going straight Jack Daniels tonight, Brent Bloom, to get myself through this.
It's not all the what ifs aren't bad.
Yes, most of them are. We're Iowa State. We are Iowa State. Yeah. You are who you are.
You tend to remember the times you were burned, not necessarily the good what ifs.
Like I like to tell people, we don't pick Iowa State because it's easy. We pick Iowa State because it's awesome.
And sometimes
there's nothing easy about being an Iowa State
there's
fan.
There's junk kicks.
Sometimes.
Part of it.
I would say 3 out of 4 times you're going to get kicked in the balls. Over the course of my fandom.
We had a lot easier time coming up with the what ifs than we do with the favorite games. there's more there. So that just goes to show.
If you're new to the Buffalo Wild Wings summer series of podcasts here at Cyclone Fanatic, here's the format. 6 of these things. If you missed our favorite games, you can check it out on our iTunes feed, or you can go back on the Cyclone Fanatic radio portion of the website and find that tasty lick. I think you'll enjoy it. Got a lot of positive feedback on that. What we do is, Bloom and I, we really are. We're sitting in my basement. We got the Royals game on right now in the background. Braves are already done. What are your Cardinals doing? I don't know.
Play the White Sox.
Yeah,
okay. But they're best record in baseball. It's not changing anytime soon.
And there's the Cardinal arrogance, predictably, coming out from Brent Bloom. It's just Bloom and I replicating if we were sitting at a bar, which we are, talking about the clones. Thanks to Buffalo Wild Wings and Ankeny and Ames, you just ate there.
Just ate there.
What did you get? Asian Zing?
I did. I tried something different.
What?
Just because I wanted to add some conversation.
Okay.
I tried the spicy garlic.
Oh, interesting.
I'd give it a B plus.
B plus.
Pretty good.
Huh? You're a tough grader. You're tough.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not an easy teacher, but it was good. It was like the medium sauce, but it had a little spice to it.
A little garlic, a little spicy garlic.
A little different. Yeah, a little spicy garlic. I mean, it's named aptly there. It was good. No, it was actually interesting. The place exploded when the U.S. Women's World Cup team scored a goal.
That's great.
We've come a long ways.
Everybody will cheer for America.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter what we're doing. If it's curling, it doesn't mean that whatever. We don't need... That's a
it was tasty, though. Always a good summer hangout. Tuesday night,
absolutely.
Grab the wing special.
I need to branch out. I just do the Asian Zing when I go there. But having said that, though, there's a lot that I like. With the Parmesan...
garlic?
Yes. My dad, my old man, gets that. Delicious. Delicious.
And so the spicy garlic's like that, but a little more
Caribbean
heat.
Jerk.
A little more heat to that fastball.
Yeah.
There's a lot, man. There's
the habanero.
The habanero, I've never went down that path.
Oh yeah, Daddy likes that.
I can get like 3/4 down the list, and then I know I'm getting out of my lane.
Mm-hmm.
If I go too far, like I can't handle it.
Yeah,
just give me my mediums.
Well, be sure to support our friends at Buffalo Wild Wings,
great place
in Ankeny and Ames. All right, so the What Ifs podcast is what we're beginning right now. I like to. It's to me, it's more the kicks to the balls is how I look at this.
Yeah.
We could do 4 podcasts on this topic.
Oh, it could go on for days.
So we've got to, like, we can't.
We got to narrow it down.
Like, we will go 5 hours if we say everything that we think and know about these topics. We've got to be strategic in how we analyze this.
Where do you want to start?
Well, do we start, do we go chronologically, or do we go like the biggest first, or the not, how about we go with the not so big nut cups
not
first,
so big nut
and cup. Then we work up to the biggest.
Can we say some good ones?
Sure.
Like, what if Fred Hoiberg doesn't decide to play basketball at Iowa State, instead plays football at Nebraska, or
isn't
plays
that
basketball
negative,
at Arizona?
Oh, yeah.
You know, so there's some good things. But yeah, we might as well just jump right in.
Where do you want to start? Just throw one out there.
I'll throw one that's not talked about because it's an entry and it rolls into a couple others. Let's start with recruiting.
Okay.
Because I think that's the basis for every program is guys, and Iowa State fans love this, guys that they almost got, they didn't get. There's one famous NBA Hall of Famer, maybe a top 15 player of all time, that went on a visit to Iowa State, ended up picking UMass.
Dr. J. That was on my list. And again, folks, the way we do this summer series of podcasts, Bloom and I have not looked at each other's list. But I do have – that's at the bottom of my list. The bottom one on there is Dr. J to Iowa State, ?
Dr. J went on a visit to Iowa State, ended up going to a concert in Des Moines. This is in the 60s.
Do we know the concert?
The Temptations.
Really?
The Temptations. Went down, almost committed to Iowa State. Instead, he's an East Coast guy, stayed in the East Coast. But Iowa State was brutal in basketball. Really, from Gary Thompson to Johnny Orr, they were just awful for that entire stretch. That includes our guy Eric Heft's stretch, just not very good. Heft was good.
Heft is the all-time assist leader,
single
correct?
Game, yeah. 16 in a game.
Yep.
But if they get Dr. J, I think the fortunes are turned a little bit. Mm-hmm. But that's our oldest one. But then even, let's go into the Johnny Orr era, near-miss recruit from Michigan. Glenn Rice.
He went to Michigan, right?
He ended up going to Michigan, won a national championship at Michigan. He was down to Iowa State and Michigan. He picked the Wolverines.
I didn't
Johnny
know
Orr could have had him. Could have had
Why him. Didn't? So he just wanted to stay home?
I don't know the exact story, but apparently he had verbal to Iowa State and at the last second switched to Michigan.
What about Ivan Chirkalu?
Ivan Chiriev.
Oh, that's his last name?
Chiriev. Yeah, that was the Wayne Morgan guy. Remember the five-star?
Yeah, he was big
Russia?
Time.
Was he Russian?
Something like that.
Yeah, they made a huge deal, a big press release about it. The guy never showed up to campus. But this was an interesting, recruiting-wise.
Who was the running back in the McCarney era?
Oh!
Webster Patrick.
Yeah.
Webster Patrick. That's a blast from the past.
That guy got so much hype. Did he ever make it? Remember, he made it for like a day?
Yeah.
I swear he was on campus for a little bit.
Well, here...
He was like the number one dual threat running back.
I once got cussed out by a guy.
I remember that.
I got cussed out by a coach on McCarney's staff.
That was when you were running Cyclone Nation.
I was running Cyclone Nation.
You had
Nation.
The scoop.
And I nailed it.
You get the Webster Patrick scoop.
So I'm talking to, who was it? It's
his
Webster
Patrick.
It was his, like, JUCO coach.
Yeah. No, he wasn't. He was a high school kid. He was from,
No, but then
Houston.
Then I think he went JUCO. And
I don't remember.
I'm talking to Webster Patrick's coach. And he's sitting there talking to Don Nelson. Nelson was the guy recruiting
the defensive line coach.
Yeah.
What was it? Mike Nelson,
there you go.
Who is still, I believe, on McCarney's staff.
Yeah, down in North Texas, yeah. You're right. And the this guy's in town. Coach is like, yeah, Webster just committed. He's a Cyclone, all this stuff. And I can hear Nelson like in the background, like it's done. And I called like a source at Iowa State. I won't say his name. And like he cussed me out, like because they a lot of times they try and keep it a secret. Yeah, for like strategic purposes. And they're like, he's not there. He's not mother effing there. Yada yada. And I'm like, no, he is there. And I was like, okay, fine. Can I talk to Coach Nelson then? Like, can you patch me through to his office? I'd like to talk to him.
Because you knew he was in.
Yeah, because I knew
Houston.
he was in California, wherever he was. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, I mean, he's out for lunch right now or something like that. But nonetheless,
that was
Webster Patrick.
You didn't have the reputation at the time.
Yeah, they didn't know who I was.
You were just kind of a nobody.
I was working for Dayson Narcisse.
That's right. Speaking of what if, those guys. No, another recruiting class. This would never happen now. This is a fascinating story because I had kind of forgotten about this, but we got reminded. Thank you, by the way, all the people on Twitter.
You guys
were
great.
Comments. Yeah, it was fantastic today. But Tim Floyd's 1997 1998 recruiting class. This was supposed to be like the best recruiting class in the nation. So this one had Marcus Fizer. It had Martin Rancic. It had Lee Love. It had Jerry Curry. And it also had Chris Riddins and Walter Moore, two guys that didn't play ever. But there's a couple other guys on that recruiting class, C.J. Bruton and Jerrod Henderson.
Okay.
Iowa State fans, it'll ring a bell for some of those guys. Bruton was the Australian kid, played at Indian Hills, but accepted like $9,000 in money professionally when he was like 15. So he's ruled like last second ineligible by the NCAA.
It's brutal.
Bruton was a stud. Eventually got picked in the second round of the NBA draft out of Australia. He was awesome. Left-hander, like 6'3", fantastic. And then Jerrod Henderson ended up being academically ineligible at Iowa State, I believe. I don't know the exact case. Ended up going to Louisiana Tech. This is their second leading scorer all time. Scored 1,900 points. Gunner. Complete gunner.
Bruce Vanderbilt.
Eventually, yeah. He was actually voted to their all-century team. He was that good. Led him to a couple NITs. He was in the recruiting class. But here's the interesting part that would never happen today. Those eight guys played an exhibition game against the other Big 12 basketball recruits, including Chris Mim, in Hilton Coliseum the summer before they came to Ames. So it was like a sanctioned exhibition game for the Iowa State recruits. They said it was the Iowa State recruits against the Big 12 recruits.
Seriously?
Yeah, in Hilton.
Wow.
And there's like 4,000 people.
Did you go?
Iowa State lost 115 to 107. And they were led by, I think, Bruton and Fizer ended up leading the way. Mim actually had 21 points in that game.
Wow.
But that would never happen now. Can you imagine, like, if the Iowa State recruits played against the rest of the Big 12 recruits in an exhibition game and the compliance disaster?
Oh, yeah. The NCAA would wet its pants.
What are you doing? But those guys, if they calm that whole class, Floyd, interim year there, where they were bad. I mean, they were really bad in between Willoughby and Tim's last year. This is not a good year. But if they have that group, he might not go to the Bulls. And so you don't get Eustachy, and the whole thing could be different.
Then Eustachy doesn't drink with co-eds.
Well, he's never there.
Yeah, because he does. Yeah.
So
that doesn't happen.
But that brings us into another one of my what-ifs, and it's a general one. What if Larry Eustachy stays on the straight and narrow and then never gets into the co-ed
thing? To me, that's what's fun about this podcast, because we can go in. It's kind of like those books when you were a kid where it would be like, do you want to jump off the cliff and try your parachute?
Yeah.
Turn to page 36. Or do you want to play it safe? And so what does happen, Bloom? You were more of a clone, way more of a clone than I was back then. What happens to Eustachy's program? Because it was starting to struggle.
It was, but was that because of
the drinking?
The drinking. And he had signed. Okay, that 03 team was going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
And I mean, he had just signed that great recruiting class. It was
Heinrich?
No. So this is 03. So this is after the Fizer years.
Okay.
The class was Adam Holuska, who's a top 50 kid.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jackson Roman, great JUCO, RIP.
God rest his soul.
Tim Barnes, who was a pretty good point guard. I think
couldn't keep his head on straight.
One of more underrated. Yeah, had his own problems. And Chris Alexander, the other 7'1" guy, who was also somewhat of a head case. But that was a pretty good class. And then the next year, Larry had just signed Stinson Blaylock.
Yep.
And they were starting to get it turned. I have a feeling that if Larry's there and not Wayne in 2003-2004... That team with Holman, Roman, Jake.
Sullivan,
That crew. That team makes the NCAA tournament. And then I don't know where we're at.
Who led the point in that team?
Jake was kind of the de facto point guard.
Yeah, because that was kind of what they were lacking.
They didn't have, and that's why Tim Barnes keeps his head
Tim
on.
Tim Barnes got kicked off the team.
He got kicked off the team for stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But that's another one where people forget Larry. It was Louisville hired a new coach in 2001. The two candidates, Larry Eustachy, Rick Pitino.
Mm.
Larry decided to stay at Iowa State in 2001.
Mm.
I mean, that's level. That Larry was one of the first millionaires in college basketball.
What if he leaves?
What if he leaves?
Does Wayne Morgan get the job?
No, because Wayne's not there yet. Wayne came in 2003. Yeah. So then it's another deal.
But the program's in good shape.
I think Larry, X and O's wise, still one of the best in basketball. And then he was at the top of his game. The way that team, and we'll get into it because it's probably my number one what if, is that this certain significant game in 2000. I rewatched that today. And those guys were absolute.
Do you need another shot?
Absolute men. I watched it today. I'm not over it yet. So I don't want to get into it yet. But Larry had him going, man. Like that, if he stays sober and straight and the way that recruiting was picking up, I don't know where Iowa State could have climbed to consistently under his tutelage.
Thinking about today, about Jackson Froman a lot.
Yeah.
And you see, what everything you just said got me to thinking about Fred's tenure.
Hoiberg.
Yeah. If Fred has a Roman, Homan on those teams, because the way that Larry coached those guys to be just mentally tough, I don't know if Fred's guys were ever to that.
No.
They're mentally tough in a different way.
That was one of my thoughts while watching this, that 2000 team would have potentially eaten this last Hoiberg team alive, just with the physicality. Now, mm-hmm. The skill is different. I think this year's team
more talented.
Was at more talented and skilled. But that Pfizer Tinsley team, they ripped the arms off of Michigan State. I mean, they beat them up and down. They just blew it. They absolutely blew it.
Would have mentally just played chess with those guys.
Oh man,
too.
Pfizer and Stevie Johnson, Mike Nurse, Cantrell Horton, just tough as nails. I mean, the way Larry had him going, and he's probably brutal to play for, and I know that. Like Paul Shirley wrote about it,
yeah,
that he was an absolute a-hole to play under. But those guys were so tough and so good that they were the toughest team in America, and that's what made Larry good. He was insufferable at times, but when they were on, man, that team was unbelievable. His era was unbelievable. Just a complete Warriors, that group. So I wonder if he's there. He's the type, though. The way he was coaching him probably wears out his welcome at some point anyway.
He's Jim Harbaugh, Tom Thibodeau.
But if he, I just wonder. You always wonder about the sobriety thing. What happens? Because that 2003, when that happened, it set Iowa State basketball back. And Wayne was a nice Band-Aid there for a year, but it was never going to be the permanent answer.
All right.
I got a good what if. You mentioned Hoiberg.
Okay.
What if Royce White doesn't decide to transfer to Iowa State? We are not in this position right now. He was
Fred's not the coach of the Bulls.
The Pied Piper. Absolutely not.
He is not the coach of the Bulls.
Because that team, without Royce, that first team that made the tournament, was pretty good. It's not a tournament team.
They're a bubble team, probably on the outside looking in.
He was individually as dominant as any Cyclone in my era, just the way Royce could take over a game. Him and Pfizer. But the way Royce played towards the end of that year.
But Pfizer also had Tinsley with him, though.
He did. And I mean, that...
Royce didn't have a Tinsley.
He didn't have... I mean, Chris Allen's okay. Scotty Christopher was okay.
Yeah, but they're not Tinsley.
They're not Tinsley. But without Royce, that... Obviously, Stanley hasn't made four straight NCAA tournaments. It would have been a slower build. And Fred is probably not the coach of the Bulls without Royce White.
So you're saying... Would you rather have Royce have not come?
I don't know. I mean, and that's the way you can look at it.
No, not me. I'm glad that we loved and lost.
Royce, though, that year, I think you could argue, best short-term player in Iowa State history. What he did in 1 year, so memorable. I mean, he's there for a year.
Is he the single most talented player in Iowa State history?
I mean, I always go back to Jamal and Pfizer as my de facto. And then Seneca on the football side.
No, but where do you put Royce?
From an individual standpoint, easily in the top three. He could do everything.
I'd put him above those guys.
Maybe. He's close. That'd be an interesting conversation for people. Would you rather have Royce with his versatility or Pfizer? And then I think Tinsley's behind those guys. at their peak.
I guess the raw physicality. Who's your coach? I don't think Royce fits well with Larry Stacey.
No, but Royce could single-handedly, when he wanted to, and there was in the Big 12, he bullied people. Just completely took over games.
I firmly believe right now, even after all of his screw-ups, that if Royce put it to his head that he really wanted to be an NBA player, that he could play in the NBA.
Oh, that's why he's going to be on the Clippers Summer League team, and there's multiple teams that will offer him a contract when he's done.
You really think he'll have multiple offers?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know he does. He supposedly had 4 or 5 offers for Summer League. The talent, Chris, is never a problem with him. And when he was good at Iowa State, he outplayed the Kentucky roster in that game in 2012. He's a what if. If he doesn't come, I think we're not in this position for Iowa State basketball.
So can I scratch off Eustachy boozing with co-eds?
Yeah.
Or does that need to be addressed separately?
It's the whole thing, whether it's the co-eds or the booze or just the wearing out of the team. It was going.
Eustachy's antics.
It was going to blow up eventually, but I let's save the 2000 Michigan State game discussion for later.
Okay, I'm going to scratch that. I'm going to scratch off Dr. J to Iowa State. Here's one for you. Do you want to go to football or basketball?
Whatever. Let's jump.
Let's switch it here for a second, and let's go to what, in my opinion, is just one massive what if. The entire 2005 football season.
Ugh.
It starts with the Nebraska game. What, double overtime?
Triple.
Triple overtime. What if Nick Leaders
picks up the...
No, he intercepts that pass that bounces off of his hand. In the one overtime.
Who had the fumble recovery? Could have taken it.
DeAndre Jackson. What if DeAndre Jackson just picks up the damn ball and runs? He's the fastest guy on the field. So then we go back home the next week. Baylor. This is pre-Art Briles Baylor we're talking
but
about here.
Let's reset this a little bit, though. In 2005, Iowa State started the year. They struggled to beat Illinois State.
Yeah, but then they beat Iowa. Number 8 Iowa.
And then they almost lost to Army on the road.
But that was a weird game.
But they're 3-0 going into Lincoln. They're ranked.
Yeah, 24th, I believe.
And at that point, you're going, okay, here we go. That was the that
no
Nebraska
Texas and Oklahoma
game,
that year on the schedule.
That Nebraska game was there too. Zach Taylor, was that the quarterback? No, not Zach Taylor.
That was Callahan years.
Jake Taylor. What was the cat's
Zach
name?
Taylor.
Zach Taylor.
Yeah.
Zach Taylor.
Zach Taylor is a former.
He's now a quarterback coach for somebody.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
So that Nebraska game starts it, but I want to say that whole season is full of it. You've got Shaggy missing kicks. I mean, God love him. I remember being at Lawrence that last game of the year, basically booking my tickets to the Big 12 championship game.
They had that game won.
Blew that game. The
quarterback for trivia question. Quarterback for Kansas.
Brian Luke.
Backup. Brian Luke.
Yep. I don't even remember.
Starter got hurt.
I don't even remember who started. Was it
Cummings? I think it was Cummings. Was it Cummings? I'm getting my Kansas quarterback.
Cummings is the guy who played last year.
Yeah. They're all the same.
No, it was the kid who ended up playing wide receiver.
No, that was later.
Kerry Meyer?
I think that was later.
Kerry Meyer?
You're in the right era, but there was a...
It wasn't Reese.
It was a short kid.
Yeah, it was Brian Luke who finished the game. That's all I know. Who led the comeback?
He absolutely torched them in the.
Well, and McCarney and Barney Cotton got in and they're damn handed off to Stevie Hicks up the middle.
Three straight times, first down wins it.
So that one, the blown lead. What other games did they blow that year? The Baylor one where Greg Coleman
fumbled twice.
Did Greg Coleman throw that game?
No. He's not smart enough to throw it. I've got a story about Greg Coleman. I'm not going to tell it for the. I'm going to wait for another podcast, though.
To tell the Greg Coleman story?
Greg Coleman story.
Okay. You have a good story about Nebraska 2005.
Yes. Forgot about that. So there's a lot of hype around the Nebraska game. Iowa State's undefeated.
Yeah. Big game.
Nebraska, I think, was ranked 2.
Yeah.
Or they're right around it.
Well, at the very least, we thought it was a battle for the Big 12 North.
Yeah.
At that point.
So I had never been to Lincoln. I was the sports director of KURE 88.5, which is a student radio station at Iowa State. And the reason why, as a sports director, I wanted to use an outlet so I could actually go to the games for free. This is
they actually paid theory. You to go to these?
No, I get paid, but I got.
But they reimbursed you.
So, but
oh, okay.
And for 3 years, the student radio station did not go to a visiting game, just because they're cheap. And actually, there was the operators of the station were all hipsters and didn't believe in sports.
They were all about like their alternative.
Yeah,
indie
but there
music.
Was one guy. I lobbied the guy. I'm like, hey, this is a big game. I got some guys. That
we need
go.
To cover.
We need to
this
cover
game.
This game. Knowing I just want to go and get a ticket so yeah. I could go to the game. Well, so he goes, okay, that's fine. So the week before, I talked to the Nebraska media relations guy. I'm like, hey, can we cover this game for the Iowa State student radio station? He's like, yeah, no problem. I'll send you some credentials. So he sends us the credentials. And the game's a 2:30 kick, I want to say. So we go with our pals Ryan and Tim.
Yep.
Well, we won't say their last names to protect the innocent later on in this story. So we get to Lincoln. We roll in about 5 o'clock on a Friday night. And you know Ryan and Tim.
Very well.
They like to enjoy themselves.
Yeah.
So we...
A few beers. Cold ones.
We hit it kind of hard on the Lincoln FAW Friday after work. And at some point during the night, we lose Tim.
Lost him?
Don't know where Tim
disappears.
Went.
And are cell phones prevalent here?
They are, but... Not working.
We don't text back then,
no,
really.
This is flip phone.
Yeah.
This is
like
this
Motorola is Razor?
No, before then.
Oh, okay. So like Nokias?
Like Nokias, yeah, yeah. Okay. So this is the snake era of Nokia. And we lose Tim, but we don't care. Ryan and I are both single. We end up going to some house party. We were chatting with some girls. Anyway. We hit it pretty hard, and we roll in back to the hotel. We get a cab. We're responsible at about 2 in the morning. And we go to the hotel, insert our key into the lock, and it doesn't work.
Oh, that's interesting.
So we're hammered, and we're like, oh, geez, this is not good. So we go to the front desk. We're like, our key's not working. And the guy's like, okay, let me get you a new one. So he gets a new one. That doesn't work either. So we bang on the door. And Tim answers it. He happened to be sharing a room with a lady he met earlier in the night. And the lady was a 34-year-old secretary at a local high school.
So how did you find... Did she tell you this?
No, we'd hung out with her earlier in the night. So Tim escaped with this gal who...
Visiting, meaning they're watching TV.
Yeah. No.
Is the TV on?
There's no TV. And for this gal, clothing was optional.
Oh, is the bed in use?
Yes, but we're talking mid-30s, and Tim's, 2021 at the time. So he was doing the cougar thing well before the cougar thing. But Tim's a hero, and we...
It's a story that we'll live in.
We go, she stays the night. The next morning, we are all... extremely hungover.
For your big broadcast.
We called the game anyway, and it was a heck of a broadcast. And I think it was Tim's only broadcast ever. He was just more as a fan, so we got him a media credential to go. But during a lot of the plays, he's just yelling as a fan in the middle of the broadcast, going, oh, ah!
That was a
night and a half.
Quick correction. That was double overtime.
Was it double overtime?
27 to 20. That was on ABC, National Televised.
Yeah, that was the one that got away. But
following week was Baylor 23-13 with all the fumbles in the red zone. And then they went on the road and lost at Missouri in overtime.
Oh, that's the game they had again. That was Chase Daniel.
Yep, Chase Daniel.
Chase Daniel's coming out party who relieved...
Brad Smith.
Brad Smith. Yes, sir.
And then it was the year before in the game in 2004 to go to the Big 12 Championship where Brad Smith relieved... Who did Brad Smith?
Yeah, he was the
backup.
But that was another Culbertson.
Yeah, no, it was. That was the game where I was embarrassed to be an Iowa State fan. You're playing to go to the Big 12 Championship. There's like 36,000 people in it.
It's cold.
And I don't care, Bloom. Look at me. It's cold.
I don't give a crap how cold it is. People, that was cold.
You're playing to go to a Big 12 Championship game. You have any idea how many freaking people would beg to be in that position right now? Show up.
This is embarrassing.
I was embarrassed to be an Iowa State fan. So I still am about that game. should be ashamed of yourselves.
Overtime Nebraska. Baylor. That was, by the way, that was Baylor's first ever Big 12 road win. Their ninth year in the conference.
I remember I've heard stories. Jeff and Rod have told me the stories about the Baylor video guys wanting them to take a picture of them in front of the scoreboard because they've never won a road game.
And this is before cell phone cameras. So they actually had a digital camera with them.
That's how pathetic Baylor
was. So bad.
In 2005.
And they beat Iowa State.
23-13.
Their first Big 12 road win in the history of the Big 12.
That loss at Kansas was 24-21.
Oh my god!
And then, but then you had the tornado game sprinkled in there.
The A&M dominant.
The 42-14 win at A&M. You killed Kansas State 45-17.
One of Bill Snyder's last games, the first go around.
Here, just for some perspective here.
So they're that close to what? 11-0.
Yes.
That
makes
defense,
you sick.
That defense was
It makes you
built.
Sick. At the very least, Brent, they should have been 10-2.
10-2, easy.
It makes you it infuriates me to think about that year. And then even the TCU game. The Houston Bowl.
Yeah, had him there too.
Lose 24-21. It's just a big season of what ifs. That whole season is. Here's a little perspective for you, though. Looking at these attendance numbers in that year. Sorry, my dog is. Bloom.
Your dog is pulling the Tim with the secretary in the hotel room.
Maybe my dog got into the beer. He is mounting my leg right now. Anyways, 45,000. You had 54,000 for Iowa. But other than that, like the rest of these home games, 43,000, 42,000. Wow.
If McCarney goes 10-2, no chance he's let go the next year.
Well, because he's in a Big 12 championship game. Right. Didn't Colorado go that year and just get spanked by Texas?
Colorado went both years.
Yeah, and just got killed. Just got obliterated. Yeah,
both times.
Yeah, that season was very painful to me.
It was just one of those kicks, though. McCarney does not get – well, I mean, technically he didn't get fired. He resigned, but we all know what happened there.
And he got fired.
And then that he's – I don't know what if there's no Chizik, how that changes things, but that was a opportunity missed for sure. Because that defense was unbelievable.
Statistically one of the best in the country.
Yeah. I think they were they forced a bunch of turnovers. They were great run defense. Did everything well and just really, really, really solid.
Okay, let's move on. So Dan McCarney gets fired. Chizik is hired. You've heard of the other candidates, right?
I have. Inform the public.
Jim
Harbaugh. That was a massive coaching search, by the way.
That was.
They have toned down the theatrics. Remember when they introduced Chizik?
Oh, my God.
With the inflatable helmet.
They had the
packed Hilton Coliseum.
Yeah. They did something similar when McDermott was hired,
right,
too.
When he walked down the steps. When they had him walk down the steps.
I forgot about that. Iowa State's marketing department, God bless them. Like, they tried so hard, and they make such spectacles out of...
McDermott's walking down like, really, guys? Like, okay.
You could tell Greg was awkward.
So uncomfortable.
So you've got Jim Harbaugh, who's had a decent career, right?
Yeah, he's been okay.
You've had Art Briles.
Was he a candidate?
He has unofficially interviewed for the job.
Okay.
I believe. There was a conversation.
He was at Houston at the
time. He had been an assistant at Texas Tech. You know, he did his high school thing, went to Texas Tech. Then he took the job at Houston, and he was wanting to get to a Power 5.
Right.
And Brian Kelly.
Who everyone thought that was going to be the guy.
There were actual reports that he was the guy.
He was the guy.
So there you go, Bloom. Those three guys all either interviewed or unofficially talked with Iowa State.
I do wonder. It's easy to look at where what they did afterwards in their current situations.
Mm-hmm.
And then say they would do this, something similar to Iowa State. I don't know if that's the case. It's a different
I don't know
job.
Either. That's the point of what if.
It's a different job.
But those three, who does the best job at Iowa State?
Brian Kelly did an excellent job at Cincinnati, though, before he went to Notre Dame. And Harbaugh, who knows if he can recruit to Ames. He recruited Stanford. It's a little bit different.
Same with Briles. He's a Texas
and
guy.
Briles is a Texas guy. Yeah, so.
I want to say that Kelly's the best of the three.
I would agree. I think of that group, it would have been fun to have Harbaugh.
Freaking Briles, though, man.
I know.
Art Briles.
You can't do what he does, which is just put a border around Texas and get all those guys to play there. You couldn't do that in Ames.
I know, but it's still Art Briles.
Anything would have been better than Chizik, though. Because what he did with his coaching staff, it still makes me mad.
They just hired all of his buddies.
The fact that they allowed him to hire Wayne Bolt and Robert McFarland, it just...
McFarland's offense wasn't bad.
No, he was fine. More Wayne Bolt, because Wayne Bolt failed at Troy. What makes anybody think he was going to have success at Iowa State? And it just didn't work. It didn't work at all. And...
Man loved his chewing tobacco.
Yeah, he was a character, man. But it... I think McCarney would have been a better option at the time than Chizik. Although Chizik brought in guys that eventually led to Rhodes having some success. If they bring in, though, Kelly...
Kelly wins at Iowa State.
I think he does. I think he does. Because he had the system that would have worked.
I feel like Harbaugh probably would have come in and cheated enough to win.
He probably would have.
I mean, that sounds funny, yeah. But I mean...
And at the time, there was still Big 12 North South. So you could...
It's a major advantage. Yeah. I think that...
That's been Mangino's glory years in Kansas.
And he wasn't playing Texas and Oklahoma in those years.
No. But it's interesting that the careers... Of the coaching search of 06.
Let's leave this because we're going to do a coaching search. Yeah. Buffalo Wild Wings Summer Series podcast in the future.
Get an actual backstory there. Because there are some reasons there that are fascinating. Why they picked who they picked.
Yeah. And I've got some good... Yeah, we've got some good stuff on that. Let's stick around with football. Seneca, was he in?
Yeah, but I don't know if that changes anything. I know people wrote that in on Twitter.
Yeah, I'm just acknowledging our Twitter audience.
No, it is. Yeah, I think he was. If they win that game, maybe they're ranked even higher when they play Oklahoma, but that Oklahoma game ruined everything, and then the whole season was garbage.
They were still awful at the end of the year.
The rest of the year was just so bad.
Trey Scott, our friend Trey Scott, wrote this in, and I had this one in too, but we'll give credit to Trey, Texas football 2013.
The Jeremiah George.
The Jeremiah George strip. I am a firm believer. I don't know if they go to a bowl that year, but they clearly, I mean, that's four wins instead of three. That was a major, major hit.
And they had just come off the Texas game where they were playing with confidence because they just handled Tulsa down mm-hmm. there and looked pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
That was when Wimberly was at his best.
Mm-hmm.
Those 2 weeks.
That Texas game, he was awesome.
He was very, very good. If they win that game... Maybe it is different. They're not on the spiral because they probably beat TCU. I mean, TCU is a winnable game 2013 as well.
Yeah.
They get to a bowl game. We're not in this conversation of Rhodes on the hot seat.
All right, fine. Let's go into Nebraska 2010 then, the two-point conversion.
Same story. The punter, Keel.
Danny Keel.
Makes that pass. Iowa State makes a bowl game in 2010. Rhodes goes to... Four straight bowl games, which has never been done.
Yeah, it's unheard of at Iowa State.
And the
1 2-point conversion.
1 2-point
is the difference in that.
Four straight bowl games.
That's
and it was the right call. It was the right call.
I still love it.
I love it. I think we've lost a little bit of that.
Well,
candidly,
undoubtedly, we've lost some of that.
Maybe I know you can't continue to do the aggressive stuff if you have a reputation for it because people catch on. But it has turned. Almost a 180. I mean, Kirby Vanderkamp did a lot of that stuff 2 years ago with fakes and stuff.
They're a conservative program.
I don't think they did much at all last year.
No. Maybe it was because they had a freshman punter.
And they were behind a lot, so what's the point? But
yeah, when you're down by 20.
Onside kicks, okay. But that's another one. I mean, if Rhodes brings them to four straight bowl games, that's a pretty big selling point. And then they had a chance the next week to beat Colorado, who just fired Dan Hawkins. And the new coach was, Brian Cabral, this Hawaiian guy who had like a Hawaiian dress on the sideline.
He was wearing a dress?
Well, no, he had a lay on. Oh. And they just took Iowa State to the woodshed. That was the
Arnab
game Arnaud got hurt.
Blew out his knee.
And then Iowa State turned around, lost the next week to Missouri with Jerome Tiller at quarterback. They didn't score. They beat Nebraska. Then they would have been 6-4, and Nebraska was top 15 at the time. That changed things.
Mm-hmm.
So close.
That, I believe, is my last football-specific what if.
I think that was on my list. I had field goals, 2-point conversion. Yeah.
What if Mason Crosby's Iowa State's kicker in the 2000s? Sebastian Janikowski.
I feel bad for our guy Culbertson because
he's love Culbertson.
A fantastic dude. And he made pretty much every other kick.
Yeah.
When it wasn't a game winner on the line. I mean, I'm so glad for him. He won that Iowa game in
07.
But it
was such a worthless game.
At the time, I know.
I love Shaggy, too.
I know. Big 12 North, I know it sounds kind of hokey now, but that back then it saves McCartney's job. Mm-hmm. Puts Iowa State on the map. They probably get destroyed by Texas both those years. You're still playing for it, and your reputation is a little bit different.
Do you want to know a really in-depth story on Culbertson?
Yeah.
So our buddy Adam Carper, I don't know if he's ever told you this story, is they roomed together on the road. Shaggy and Carper did. And as legend goes, it was before that Kansas game in 05. And Adams, they're like lying in bed at night. And he's like, man, it's a tough job to be a kicker, man. There's just so much pressure on you. There's like four guys. So, you know, maybe this is a story that has expanded over the years.
Sure.
But the legend says that Carper psyched him out.
Good job,
Kansas
Adam.
Game.
Good job.
I have that on multiple sources.
And Culbertson was a walk-on from Lincoln.
God, he was good for a walk-on.
And he was really good.
Yeah.
It was an unfair situation that he was in that role.
Well, Tony Elk, the year before, two years before.
And then Josh Graybon. Josh Graybon was a scholarship kicker.
Yeah, he
was just atrocious.
Never seen a player get booed on senior day like Elk did.
Yo,
he did. He got booed on senior
day. Huge leg. Not always accurate.
Josh Graybon, man.
Josh
I forgot about
Graybon
him.
Graybon was a scholarship guy.
He was a little guy.
He was my size.
Yeah, little dude.
It's like, he would. You'd see him on the bus on the side. We're like, what?
Yeah.
Why are you wearing...
That's a scholarship kicker.
The Iowa State football gear. Man. Yeah, that team has an actual legit kicker. I don't even know it's different.
Let's go chronologically here, okay? Let's go back to basketball.
Okay.
And here's where I want to start, and then I think we work our way all the way up to Niang's foot.
The Niang foot.
Wayne Morgan is fired.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think was a good call.
I do, too.
I mean...
I agreed with that at the time.
Yeah.
Looking back, I think I still agree with it.
I do, too. What if Curtis Stinson, Will Blalock, Tashig Carr, and Sean Taggart stick around to play for Greg McDermott? Now, there is a theory out there. There's a theory in the under channels of Iowa State Athletics that those guys all knew they were leaving and waited until the very last minute. And this has not come from the McDermott faction either.
No, this is
not.
Somewhat known.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people who talk about this to this day. What my point is, what if they all stay? You're not recruiting the Corey McIntoshes of the world. You know what I mean?
Justin Gray is not having to start. No, that you're right, because there's some thought that. And you can't blame Wayne for being upset the way things were handled.
No, I don't blame him at all. And I think that Wayne, overall, is underappreciated.
Probably.
Overall, for what he did, like the bridge that he served.
He
probably
also,
underappreciated.
He also did not do the program any favors the way he handled the end.
He did not, and the APR position that he left the program in was in bad shape. They were very straddled.
And I don't know what – I doubt he said to, like, those guys, okay, completely sabotage McDermott for me. And keep in mind, Curtis and Will were NBA prospects at the time.
Yeah, but neither guy. Well, Will was Mr. Irrelevant.
Yeah, he was the last pick. If those guys come back,
by the Pistons, right?
Yes, good memory. Then it's a totally different team. And I know everyone likes to say McDermott didn't run, so they wouldn't fit with that style. I think he would have adapted to those guys.
Like he did at Creighton.
Yeah, like he did with his son.
They were a fast-paced team.
Tashied Carr, at one point, wanted to come back or thought about coming back, but ended up not.
No, Tashied Carr left.
He left during the Big 12 tournament.
Correct.
Yeah.
And he showed up at McDermott's press conference.
That's right.
And because I remember interviewing him.
And Greg called him Rashied Carr.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Good memory for you. No, but I remember Tashied Carr was at the press conference, and it blew my mind.
Like, what is he doing there?
And then it didn't come to be.
Yeah. Because what Greg worked with there, it was rough. Court Johnson was getting...
They had to replace like nine or eight scholarships.
It was really bad.
Corey Johnson, you had...
Chess and Gray, Ross Marsden. And then your backcourt, McIntosh and Taylor. I thought Mike Taylor was really good the one year he was there.
NBA player.
He was an NBA player.
Who was... So, McDermott's first recruiting class, though, also included Wes Johnson.
Doty Dunson.
Yeah, Doty Dunson.
Wes, Mike, Corey. Corey Johnson was technically in that class.
Yep. And then Lawrence Westbrook was released from his letter.
Yes.
And he ended up going to Minnesota. Lawrence Westbrook was like a legendary high school prep player in Arizona. He was scoring like 60 points a game at one point.
And then that's right.
That was a Wayne guy.
That was a Wayne guy. But didn't come in.
He had an all right career.
Yeah, he was okay.
Yeah.
Great. But that other... So next what if then, if Mike Taylor doesn't get kicked off...
Yeah, that's exactly where I'm going next.
The McDermott era is thought of differently. Because Mike Taylor may be one of the most talented in the last 10 years at Iowa State. The guy was an NBA... Like we say, he's an NBA player. He, at the time I wrote... He was a human pixie stick because he was just boundless energy, but you had no idea where he was. I mean, he absolutely crushed the Iowa State record for turnovers. He averaged like six turnovers a game, but he kept him in games because he would go off for 20 points and a half.
Yeah.
He was really good. He was a really good player. He did a little bit of everything, but he got kicked off after his junior year. Into his senior year, which would have been McDermott's second year, and then that team was not ready to pick up the slack of a Mike Taylor.
And so that team would have had Mike Taylor, Craig Brackens, and Wes Johnson.
As a freshman Craig, and then Wes Johnson into his sophomore.
That's three NBA players.
And, yeah. Right. That team could have three NBA players.
Three NBA players.
On the roster. Yeah. But instead,
that's a lot of talent.
Mike gets kicked off. Then Wes.
Yuri Ubalik?
Was Yuri on that team? Yeah, he would have been a senior. That was
Yuri
senior
Ubalik
year.
Would have been on that team. Trying to
he
think
was
of some
good player.
Of
player. He was nice.
Yeah, he was a nice player.
And then Rashawn, senior year.
Yep, Rashawn Clark.
It's a pretty good team if Mike stays.
Yeah. But. They had to, from the sounds of things, it's like
he dug
you give a guy
grave.
So many damn chances, and he...
I mean, I think the last straw was he stole his cough medicine from a pharmacy.
It was like NyQuil or something.
And then I think he exploded a fire extinguisher in the middle of the hallway.
He what?
He exploded a fire extinguisher in the middle of the hallway.
How do you do that?
Well,
I thought you meant like he destroyed one.
No, he like fired it off in the middle of the hallway or something.
That doesn't sound smart.
It's not. He wasn't the wisest, but he was talented. He was really, really good player. Remember, Mike Taylor, I believe, was the first ever player drafted from the D-League into the NBA.
That rings a bell.
He was so late in the process, he had to go to the D-League and then end up getting picked by the Clippers.
Yeah, that does ring a bell.
And then, McDermott recruited a bunch of NBA guys. He recruited more NBA guys than Hoiberg did.
Justin Hamilton. Deontay Garrett.
They just never... Gilstrap was a really nice
Gilstrap,
piece.
Yeah.
Just didn't work out.
LaRon Dendy. Never made the league, but...
Luca Steiger.
LaRon Dendy wasn't a bad player.
Luca was okay.
For what he was?
Never...
Luca Steiger.
It never fit together. Remember, he jetted in the middle of conference play.
Boy, that team, because that was the same team as Chris Colvin.
Yep.
They got killed by Duke.
After they started hot.
Whatever happened in the Chris Colvin, the locker room fiasco?
Oh, he
cursed out.
F-bomb at Jamie. Or at McDermott.
I don't know if it was at Jamie, but I know Jamie was involved.
Jamie was there. And that was the last
Something
spot.
Happened in the locker room where he just spazzed out after that game.
After the Duke game, because he didn't play.
And it was in Chicago, and he was almost like embarrassed because his whole family was there.
Yep.
In that part, it got really nasty too, because you were in the point where fans were washing their hands of McDermott, so you had some siding with Colvin, who was clearly in the wrong. But
because of what happened with Wes.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that Greg wasn't at fault anywhere along the lines. I'm just saying in that specific scenario.
There was so much. It's like what could have gone wrong went wrong with McDermott.
You know what it reminds me of?
I would say football currently.
Yeah. It reminds me of exactly.
There's a lot of similarities.
The McDermott roads, like the way this thing is ending. I hope it turns around.
Yeah, but and let me throw this at you. 2009. Certain player holds a press conference for the Ames High School.
Harrison Barnes.
Decides.
He Skypes.
Roy Williams. We know the result. But tell us about the night before. Because I think... this changes things. Because let's say he picks Iowa State.
Well, Iowa State thought they were getting him.
They what was the quote? 90...
Something like that.
98%. Yeah. We got him.
They thought they were getting him.
He as the legend goes,
he was practicing, or he was with some Iowa State players
at the facility.
Was the Sukup there?
Yeah, the Sukup
was there. Harrison was there, and legend has it like he is driving off, like holds up an Iowa State like sweatshirt,
go Cyclones
or something, and yells go Cyclones, and everybody was like, oh, there's our hint.
The night before.
And I remember getting calls, like very confident Iowa State calls. Now, having said that, I was hearing a birdie chirping the whole time saying, no.
Don't believe
it. It's not happening. It was very divided on what was going to happen there. But supposedly he was with the guys the night before.
And Sukup.
Yeah, as he's driving off, holds up the shirt or whatever and yells, go Cyclones. And also, and this was another one that sticks with a lot of people. This is what irritated a lot of people is that he invited Gary Thompson.
To the presser.
To the press conference.
And he invited the Iowa State band.
Oh, did that happen?
To the Ames High School.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that aspect of it.
Well, there was a band there.
I thought that was the Ames High Band.
I don't know. But there was a band. But you do it in your... Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was the Ames High.
He opened it to the public. Like, it was... The way that went down... So, the what if here is if Harrison picks Iowa State, McDermott doesn't take the Creighton job.
Does Doug go to Iowa State?
No.
Doug's still at Northern
Iowa. Doug goes to Northern Iowa.
What if you get Harrison and Doug McDermott?
I don't know if Doug would have done that, but yeah, that's a possibility.
That's a big what if.
Greg doesn't take the Creighton job. Fred never comes to Iowa State.
So you're insinuating that Harrison Barnes going to North Carolina created the Fred Hoiberg era.
Correct.
I got to tell you, Bloom, I got to hand it to you. I've never thought about it that way.
There's no chance Greg McDermott leaves the number one recruit in the nation.
And you're saddled with McDermott's 10-year left on his con, or 8 years left, or whatever the hell it was.
You're not going. They might have been okay. And I think Harrison was obviously tremendous.
Would Harrison be where he is now if he's at Iowa State?
Probably. He was so good. I mean, he was...
I don't know,
bro. But then Bracken's probably doesn't declare for the draft either if he knows he's going to play with Harrison. So that team could have been different. But I know for a fact, if that's the case, Hoiberg never comes to Ames. Never is the Iowa State head coach. And he's probably now, at least not the way it worked, he might have been an NBA coach someday, but not the way it
worked
out.
What if Hoiberg is Iowa State's head coach 1 year early? Does Harrison Barnes come to Iowa State?
Another potential situation.
Does Fred Hoiberg offer Doug McDermott?
Yeah, I don't know.
Considering Fred never offered an Iowa kid.
Never did. It's interesting how that all worked out. I mean, I think it worked out for everybody.
Well, it certainly did for the McDermotts.
McDermott's, yeah, for sure.
Harrison, I don't think you can say it didn't work out for him. That was a gift from God, the Creighton thing.
Right. Because that team coming back, they would have been okay. They never get Royce White, though. And then it doesn't start the ball rolling for Iowa State. They don't get Chris Babb.
No, because Greg's not going to. So, hadn't they, like, hired Nick Nurse?
Yeah, Jeff Greer.
Jeff Greer. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
They hired Nick Nurse and Jeff Greer. That would have blown up.
I don't think Nick Nurse would have fit in very well with that athletic department.
I wonder. It made sense at the time because they needed to do something different. But
I think that Nick Nurse, his motives in taking that was interim.
To be the next guy.
Maybe. Because, mm-hmm. Well, my point is, if you're Nick Nurse at that point, what's
that?
The point?
Why are you going to college?
Why are you doing that? Yeah. Like, because you have a great career. You're well-respected. Why are you going to this sinking ship?
He was the... Yeah, he was the Iowa Energy coach at that time.
Great job. I don't know, great job. I guess I don't know the hierarchy of the NBA DL.
Yeah, so that... But Harrison's decision affected all those people.
So Harrison Barnes going to North Carolina created the Hoiberg era.
Yes. I'm going with that.
All right, let's go to the Hoiberg era. Well, you want to start with Aaron Kraft?
No. Well, yeah.
Because
it's a bad call.
It's a poor call.
It's a bad call for Will Clyburn.
Fierce comeback from the Clones. Bad call. You win that game, region's wide open.
L.A.
Going to the Final Four.
L.A., then Fred will say that still.
Yes.
Completely believed it as a 10 seed. Very possible. Because, okay, the next game was Arizona. Very average offensively that year. And Ohio State beat them. Do you know end up going to the Final Four from that region?
Somebody beat Ohio State. It was... Go ahead.
Greg Marshall.
Oh, yeah.
Wichita. You could have played Wichita State to get to
You could have played
four.
A Valley team to go to the Final,
Final four. All because of a missed block charge, and then Aaron Kraft sticks like a three when he had turned down every shot all game. And that was that furious comeback. Where Iowa State was like down 11, and they tied it in about 3 minutes.
There was only like 6 minutes to go. They were down 11. Yep.
And they just... Tyrus hit a couple. I think Lucius hit one. That game, that sticks. That sticks in your craw a little bit. Because, yeah, that region was wide open. Completely wide open. Then the next year.
The foot.
The foot.
We kind of touched on this on our top games. Just because...
This is prior to the North Carolina win, which we had as a top win.
Yeah, that was an honorable mention.
It was an honorable mention.
Of our top games podcast.
Yes.
That, of course, was presented by Buffalo Wild Wings and Ames and Ankeny. Niang breaks his foot against UC Central. Clones win against North Carolina, which was surprising. I didn't think that they would.
They were favored by a point and a half, but yeah.
Carolina was the 6th seed. Mm-hmm. Iowa State was the 3. Mm-hmm. Iowa State gets out. Iowa State loses to the eventual national champion UConn Huskies in a game where they played like utter garbage other than Dustin Hoges.
For 30 minutes.
Yeah, Dustin Hoges having the game of his life, right. Mainly because North Carolina is not really – or excuse me, Connecticut is not really guarding him.
They didn't have the personnel.
They're doing what Iowa State used to do to like Perry Ellis.
Yeah, they just let him go off.
Yeah, beat us, Dustin.
If George is there, though, as an offensive weapon, they can't do that. I mean, they couldn't – the way they defended Iowa State, they took away Kane and Edgem with their two best defenders. And Iowa State didn't really have – and they took away a three-pointer. If Cyclones have a post player, their only post presence was that one big kid, the 7'2" kid.
Mm-hmm.
If Niang can bring him out on the perimeter, which Adosie couldn't do, I think Iowa State beats Connecticut by 5 to 10 points.
Which would have set up...
Shabazz wasn't that good that game. No. He was okay.
The whole, DeAndre Shabazz built up running into that
thing. Shabazz wasn't... And then the Bolt Ride was okay, too. But it was the Daniels kid who torched him, like 20. But Niang, when Niang got hurt, he was at his highest level he's been as a Cyclone. Because he was just coming off the Big 12 tournament where he just torched Kansas, then Baylor, and he was awesome against North Carolina Central. I mean, he scored 8 points with a broken foot.
So
Michigan State.
That would have set up the Michigan State Elite Eight rematch, which I think is a very natural progression into our next conversation.
2000 Michigan State.
So, Bloom, you tweeted before we started doing this something about, you're going to break the law.
Well, it was my duty to rewatch it.
Yeah, and you actually did this.
It had been probably 10 years since I watched the whole thing.
Like, how painful is that for you?
I'm still a little upset that I went through that endeavor.
You're a big officials guy.
Yes. And, it's interesting because I had made notes while I'm watching this thing.
You made more notes today?
Yeah. It's in Auburn Hills, which is down the road.
Yep.
The freaking court is green. Like, the court was green.
Mm-hmm.
It was all Michigan State people there.
Mm-hmm.
Which is completely stupid that Iowa State even had to play in that region. But the backstory is, Iowa State's AD at the time, I think was Vandeville, 2000.
Yeah.
Agreed to be a 2 seed rather than a 1 out west.
What?
Because they wanted to play in Minneapolis for the first 2 rounds. So if they don't agree to that, if they go out west instead, they don't meet Michigan State as a 2 seed.
Who do they play as the 2 if they're the 1?
The West got all screwed up. Wisconsin ended up going as an 8 seed from out there.
Oh, okay.
But so that
I'd never heard that.
I had never heard that.
So that's insane to me that anybody would ever choose that.
At the time,
that,
though, it was all about home court, and we wanted to go to Minneapolis because it's...
Yeah, but that's still asinine to me. If you have a team that good... That you're making that
Let
type of...
Let me look at the West. I'm pretty confident that was the case. But that's what...
I'm not doubting you. I've never heard that story.
At the time, it was all about regions. It wasn't the pot system, remember? So
yeah.
Where you went was all about... They broke them out in fours, but it was... I can't bring it up right now. But yes,
people realize what we're doing here.
That was number one. They shouldn't have ever played Michigan State in that game anyway. And they're there, and Iowa State is playing their absolute ass off. They are out-rebounding this Tom Izzo physical team by 15 with 5 minutes left in the game. If Michigan State was physical, Iowa State was like the frickin' Hulk. Just unbelievable. They took it to him. Jamal Tinsley's making shots. Pfizer's doing his thing. Iowa State's up 7 with 5 minutes left. And this is what happens. they get called for a 3-second violation. The 3-second violation is the biggest cop out in college basketball. Not a big believer in it.
You don't see it called very often.
No, rarely. And it was really ticky-tacky.
It's basically like the infield fly in Major League Baseball.
And up to this point, after I made a note that the officials were actually giving Iowa State some calls up to the 5-minute mark. Like, there were some 50-50 calls that went Iowa State's way.
Okay.
And Michigan State couldn't hit the broadside of the barn in this game. It was very poor shooting by them. But so Iowa State's up 7 with 5 minutes left. They get a 3-second violation. On the next possession, Paul Shirley falls in the lane on a free throw attempt as a violation. The next Iowa State offensive possession, Tinsley misses a point-blank layup.
Mm-hmm.
It was reminiscent of the Hampton game the next year. I mean, just point-blank, nobody around him. The next possession, moving screen on Pfizer, and will look like a perfectly legal screen. The middle of the floor. Like, never gets called.
Who are the officials?
Curtis, what's his name? He's now the Big 12 coordinator of officials. This is
what Curtis Shaw?
Curtis Shaw was one of them.
Okay.
Frank Bassoni, who was the one, which leads me to my next point. Lonnie Dixon, I think, was the other
one. So Curtis Shaw, when he does his little spiel at Big 12 Media Day this year, should I go and interview him about that?
Yeah, I think we're past the point where you can. I would honestly love to get his – that's a great idea.
Just ask him about it.
Yeah, like,
hey,
he was
Curtis,
part of the crew.
A lot of people think he threw that game.
He wasn't the one that made the call. It was Bassoni who made the charge. So they called a moving screen.
How would I ask that question to him?
I would say, hey, it's been 15 years. Can you give us your recollection of the Elite Eight game? Because he was the one who ejected Larry at the end of the day.
That was Curtis who did
Curtis,
that?
Yeah. But the one that will go down in infamy, Iowa State has the ball up 5. Or 4, I think it was. Tinsley hits Paul Shirley cutting down the lane. Michigan State defender cuts him off, does not allow him to land. Contact, they both fall down. Easy call. It's a blocking call. You got to let somebody land. The side official calls the blocking foul correctly. Bassoni on the baseline has it a charge. In that situation, you can either get overruled or you can do the cop-out, which they did. They called it a block and a charge. So it ends up being the 5th foul for Paul Shirley. Iowa State cannot handle it from there. Michigan State goes on a run. They get an alley-oop to Morris Peterson. Iowa State completely melts down. Michigan State wins by 10 points.
Are you insinuating you think the game was thrown?
I don't think it was thrown. Because Iowa State...
You just think it was awful officiating.
The last 5 minutes were brutal. It was completely brutal, but Iowa State did not help matters because they had some dumb mistakes in there as well.
And Larry getting chucked.
But that was... That was over so late.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
But 7-point lead, 5 minutes to play with that team as solid and tough-minded as they were. I mean, Iowa State was dominating that second half. They had them. They absolutely had them.
I'm noticing
and
a trend here.
They didn't finish. They did not finish. Michigan State goes on, coasts to a national championship.
Noticing a trend here. You got that. You got Aaron Kraft. You've got
field goals.
Well, I'm just going the ones where the ref screwed Iowa State.
Okay.
Kansas, the charge. The gang charge.
Yep, Tom O'Neill.
You got the football. Jeremiah George.
Yep.
Pollard may have been onto something last year in Stillwater.
What?
I'm kidding.
I know, but it is. You don't.
You get tired of getting kicked in the balls.
And a huge, I'm
sick
huge
of it.
Moments.
I'm tired of getting kicked in the balls.
If that blarge isn't called, if it's called correctly, chances are Iowa State makes the free throws. They're up 7-6, whatever, with 3 minutes left. And they might have still blown the lead. I don't know. It's just the way those last 5 minutes unfolded, it is so infuriating watching back. Because you think of the difference that could have made for Iowa State basketball. If there's a national championship banner hanging in Hilton Coliseum right now, how much different is life? Because the
water tastes better.
The water is fantastic.
The steak is more juicy.
Our whole thought of Iowa State athletics is different. It's a completely different perspective.
Which goes into the Big 12 missile crisis. If you're a national championship caliber program, how differently is Iowa State treated in 2010?
You're a big player at the table. Let's talk about the missile crisis.
To me, this is the biggest of them all.
It turned out okay.
Yeah, but what if? What if Iowa State is going Big East, going Mountain West, Conference USA? What if the Big 12 blows up? Put it that way. Life as we know it is over.
What is that? What is Iowa State at that point?
Tell you this.
No, is there a CycloneFanatic.com?
I'm not doing this for a living.
Small.
I mean, there's no way I'm doing this for a living.
How close was it?
Oh, it was close. It was so close where people at Iowa State calling me like scared for their jobs. People who you would think would be insiders on this calling me, asking me what I know.
Wow. Nervous. Because that's their livelihood.
It's their life. It's their life. You think that the Iowa State, if you're regulated to a crappy Big East.
The Mountain West.
That you're going to be able to pay coaches.
What was the most likely scenario? Was it the Big East? Because I know it was a Forgotten Five.
I think that Forgotten Five creates some sort of league with the Big East, with the Cincinnati's, with the those schools. I think that the Catholic League still happens. The basketball league,
smaller level.
And I think your Houston's, your TCU, like, you know what I mean. I think that's kind of like a new conference.
And the TV money is
a tenth. I would say a tenth of what you're getting now,
because you don't have Texas. No. Nebraska.
You're playing games on Wednesday nights.
Yeah, there's no South End Zone.
So this is a story I've always heard about why this all went down. I've never confirmed this with anybody, but it's a pretty good person who once told me this. It was Kansas City or Dallas, the Big 12 meetings, right? And this is when the original 12 are all there. And from what I'm told, Nebraska was on board to stay.
Okay.
They had worked out a deal where they're going to split television revenue equally. Dan Beebe's still in charge. Everybody's feeling really good when they leave. The next day, out of nowhere, Colorado bolts.
To the Pack.
Colorado goes rogue. Nobody, they don't tell anybody. They're gone. Spooks Nebraska.
That's where they went.
So, if you've got an arrogant Nebraska fan who preaches their Big Ten loyalty to you, I have it on pretty good source that at one point they wanted to stay in the Big 12. Now, having said that, I don't think that they are regretting going to the Big Ten. I don't believe that at all. I think at that time, that equal television revenue, which didn't make any sense really to me because they were one of the big dogs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They were getting more revenue than a lot of the South schools.
Remember in 2009, they played in the Big 12 championship game. And they lost to Texas on that controversial play where the clock ran out. Didn't stop and it's something. If Nebraska beats Texas that year, I don't know if they're opt to leave.
Yeah, and
they'd been hosed by Texas a couple times.
Yeah, I don't think it was really the television revenue that bothered Nebraska, but it was the more we're not treated equally. Yeah, and
Texas gets everything.
Yeah, and part of the whole let's split everything was a big deal to them, and they were going to get that. See, because I feel like I always felt like Nebraska had more pull than it used.
Yeah.
It's a giant brand.
Is it still?
Well, back then more than now.
Yeah.
Their brand has diminished significantly since joining the Big Ten, in my opinion.
The things I remember from that was talking to good friends and family members who wanted Iowa State to go to the Mountain West.
Oh, my God.
Because they could win then. And I was like, no. You're Colorado State. Like, what are you? Like, what? But I had family members go, well, then we could actually win 8 or 9 games. But that
no, because you're not going to have as good of players.
You're not recruiting anybody. You're still getting the leftovers. And the other part that still makes me mad, and I should let it go, but was it the Des Moines Sports Radio at the time almost taking pleasure in the potential demise of Iowa State? Still bothers me. I mean, there's certain hosts. Some are. I think they're all gone now. But it was just.
I know where you're going.
It was as if they were celebrating. It was a big story. So I got it. I got the glee. But
dude, this is really bizarre. But that kick, that Big 12 title game, Brent, that you were just talking about, is just being flashed on SportsCenter right now.
Why? It's weird.
And they're doing like buzzer beaters in that kick that Texas made at the end of that game.
Yeah, because the clock stopped. That's what it was.
Yeah, that's what they're doing, like the top buzzer beaters of all time.
That's funny.
That is so bizarre.
Spooky.
We're sitting here at my bar in my basement, and that, I mean, Brent more or less got done telling that faction of the story, and it just flashed across on SportsCenter.
Weird world.
Wow.
Yeah. But that bothered me at the time.
Yeah, because you felt like there are people taking pleasure in others' pain.
Yeah, because they got a little talking point out of. Because I mean, the Iowa State Athletic Program would be nothing. It turns into what?
Would Jamie Pollard want to stay?
Why would you? I mean, you can't keep Fred. Probably. I mean, Fred had just been hired when this was going down.
And Fred probably doesn't even want to stay for that matter.
Rhodes was highly sought after at the time. I don't know if he stays. Like you,
can you pay Bill Finnelly what you're paying Bill Finnelly at that level? Probably not.
It's the whole landscape is different. And I know Iowa State has not won as many games as some people would like in football in the Big 12, but they are very healthy athletically. And I think it's a lot because Dan Beebe really was the one who ended up saving.
Dan Beebe saved the
league. Big 12.
He's the butt of all the jokes, but he saved the league.
He did it.
Did you read the
fantastic. It's what we've heard. It was the Andy Staples.
Yeah. That Beebe was the guy who orchestrated everything, and he took the fall.
Because if that goes 8 more hours, I think Texas and Oklahoma bolt, and it's done. It was that close. Yeah, because I remember getting the same calls you were getting. Like, what do we do? Like, I'm not going to have a job.
Well, I just remember selfishly.
Yeah, and you were running. I remember those.
I just moved up here.
You just moved up here, and you're Fanatic. There's no way you can cover a Mountain West. You
not
can't
make
get
a
advertisers
living.
And make a living off that.
No.
Big East team. Yes, that
living in my apartment with my new wife.
Yeah.
Living off of my crappy salary.
Yep.
Making like 25 grand.
It was all because Dan Beebe rescued at the last second.
Do you have any others? I have one more, but we don't know the resolution to it.
We should mention, just because I think it is the biggest story in Iowa State athletic history, is Johnny Orr deciding to take that phone call and coming to Iowa State. So that started Hilt Magic, and Iowa State is
Fred Hoiberg.
And another coaching one that the old-timers will bring up, I don't remember it, that when Iowa State hired, I think it was Jim Kreiner in the 80s, the other potential coach, John Cooper, went to coach Ohio State. Of course, former Iowa State letter winner, was on that Dirty 30 team. Had a chance to hire him, didn't. And probably would have been a better option than Jim Kreiner.
What if Hoiberg doesn't go to the Bulls?
Can't answer that yet.
Too soon?
We can't answer that yet.
Just saying.
I don't know. I've got a theory on that that I will save for a later date. I actually think this is going to work out best for everybody.
Well, you're kind of on record saying that already.
I don't know.
That column that you wrote before Fred left, that everybody said we were just fishing for page views.
I had a sense that Fred knew what he was doing here. I mean, the recruiting was not going in the right direction. I think he could have rescued it with a transfer or two. But even Fred Hoiberg with his magical touch couldn't have.
They weren't getting cheeky.
They just weren't. Yeah, it wasn't going to happen. And so now you're. Yeah, I think everybody made the right move. And I really like the current regime's ability to go out and get guys, which is what they need. Because they would have been good for a year with Fred. And I think that'll be always a what if. Is this a coming year, depending on what happens? But it's also a what if for the future if Fred stays.
Prohm's in a bad spot, though. All those guys are.
It's not fair.
Brent, I can sense how this is going to go.
I see it already.
I can sense how it's going to go.
Stop it.
That's what I'm doing. If we talk about it, maybe.
It's not fair.
It's not fair to whatever happens at the end of this year to say, well, what would Fred have done?
Correct. And it's not fair for the future as well, because Fred was good at everything, but the way that thing was going, I don't know. I mean, this wasn't a contending Final Four team for the next 5 years.
Well, and just because you're in on guys like Cheek Diallo doesn't mean anything if you don't get them.
And we'll never know. I mean, it's impossible to say, but I like where Iowa State's at right now. And it's not fair to the Prohm staff to say, oh, this is what Fred would have done with this team. Because like we saw last year, you get the tournament.
It's a crapshoot.
It is.
It's a total crapshoot.
And it will. This is what Iowa State's about, though. There's always a what if. Until they get to that top of the mountain, that what if is going to exist. And that's why it's entertaining, because we can have this discussion for, an hour and a half?
Yep.
And Iowa State still hasn't been to the top of the mountain.
We don't pick Iowa State because it's easy.
Same story.
We pick Iowa State because it's awesome.
And as we said in the last podcast, the unexpected party is always the best party.
Hopefully we have one in football this year.
I hope so, too.
It'd be really nice for that program to defy odds and get to a bowl game.
Yeah.
I'd like to go somewhere nice.
And you know what? What Prohm's got, I mean, there could be some what-if potential in a good way for the upcoming basketball season. Everyone buys in. We'll see.
Thanks for coming over tonight.
Yeah, Bloom. It was fun.
Have a great 4th of July, everybody. We appreciate you listening. We got 4 more of these. Don't know which one we're doing next, but we'll surprise you. Thanks to our friends at Buffalo Wild Wings in Ankeny and Ames for sponsoring our summer series of podcasts. For Brent Bloom, I'm Chris Williams. So long.